papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis, some insight into decision-making in American newsrooms, coming to you from some veteran journalists. I'm Rex Smith, former editor of the Times Union, now with The Upstate American. I'm here with some colleagues, former editor of the Daily Gazette, who is now vice president of the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick.
Hello.
How do? And over on that end of the studio table is Barbara Lombardo, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy.
Hello.
Hello. She's now teaching at UAlbany. Here is our producer. Da-da-da-da. Fanfares plays David Gustina, the morning host of WAMC.
Back again this week, but only because Ian was supposed to be on with us. He wasn't feeling well.
So I'm so sorry.
I'm a last-minute sick fill-in.
Well, you're not sick, man. You're not a sick fill-in.
You're sick in a good way.
I said that on purpose.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk here about, obviously, a key issue is the move by several major American newspapers not to endorse in this presidential election. We'll talk over the next few minutes about why we think they did that, whether or not it was the right or wrong thing to do, and what this might portend for the future of legacy media. Just to set the stage, of course, if you missed it, the Washington Post and the Los Angeles Times, both owned by billionaires, multi-billionaire, in the case of the Post, Jeff Bezos, has announced they will not do endorsements. It turns out they actually are following others. The Minnesota Star Tribune, the Tampa Bay Times, Alden Global Capital, which owns a lot of the small papers around the country, and Gannett, the largest newspaper chain. What is going on and what do we think? Why don't we start, Judy, with you?
So let's start this out by saying that if you own a newspaper, you get to decide what's published and what's not published. That's the harsh reality. We often talk about journalism in this studio, about this noble profession, and it is a noble profession. But printing a newspaper, running a media company is, unless it's a nonprofit, it's a business. And if you own it, you get to decide. You can endorse yourself, your cat, your camel, your donkey, your whatever for president. You can print on the front page, you know, your fishing trophy. You can do whatever you want if you own the newspaper. I, on the other hand, I'm a subscriber, and I can do whatever I want with my subscription business. And so we leave that to the subscribers. What has happened in our industry this election cycle is the diminishment of resources. I think a lot of the papers have decided not to bother, not to alienate the readers, the half of the readers who may be supporters of one candidate or another. So I think part of it is they don't have the time to do it. Another issue is opinion articles don't get a ton of traffic. I mean, they're not the most well-read items on newspaper website. Does that mean that that should be driving the decision? No, but it should be part of the decision. I think I want to say that I canceled my Washington Post subscription. It was an immediate reaction. Well, I gave it an hour or two, and then I canceled, despite all my journalism colleagues saying, no, you can't give up on the journalism. That's so important. Well, this was the only form of resistance I could take.
Really? And how about Amazon? Do you order anything from Amazon?
Oh, I seriously have considered that too, but my drip on Amazon is going to be nothing like 250,000 people gathered together and said, hey, Jeff Bezos, this is wrong. This is an abrogation of your responsibility as owner of a key institution in the heart of our democracy to forego a decision in this crucial election at the last minute. I could have understood it, perhaps, if they had decided 6 months ago that we weren't going to do this. But no, they did it at the last minute. The editorial was already written. And I'm doing the only thing I feel like I can do. Yeah, sure, I'd like to have a massive drop-off in Amazon subscriptions, but that's not going to happen. What my impact could be felt with was going to the Washington Post. You know what? They got plenty of reporters, plenty of photographers. They're well-funded. Everybody's struggling. Instead, I'll buy another local newspaper subscription.
I infer, Barbara, that you don't agree with the cancellation idea.
Well, I think it's not a great idea to cancel, because by canceling, you're shooting yourself in the foot. And the good journalism that the Washington Post reporters are doing and columnists are writing, that's what we really want from the Washington Post. And by canceling a subscription, you're not really hurting Jeff Bezos, who just owns that paper for the fun and the power of owning a paper. It's already it loses money under, and he doesn't care about that. He's making money. People are going to continue to go through Amazon. I think this is a horrible, and not just his paper, but all the ones that are not endorsing, because they're not endorsing is tantamount to an endorsement for Trump. It's an abdication of the leadership role of the press. And sure, you could say that it's arrogant of newspapers to say that what we have to say is important and you should listen to who we want to endorse. But the abdication of the leadership role, when you have a candidate who has called the press the enemy of the American people, when you have a president who has said that our election was stolen to this day, and you don't have an opinion as the press of what you think ought to be done in our country. There's a book called On Tyranny by Timothy Snyder, and the first rule in his book is do not obey in advance. And here you have the leaders of our country's media organizations offering themselves up without even being ordered to.
Now, David, you work for public media.
I do.
Which does not have a tradition of endorsement. In fact, that's not what happens. WAMC does not
that's
have
correct.
An editorial page, so to speak. So do you have a different perspective on this? What do you think is
Well,
going on?
I think it's a mistake, especially in this political climate, for the Washington Post and these others not to weigh in on this election. I don't think the stakes could be any higher than we're seeing right now in 2024. However, I do want to share what Bezos said, because I think it's interesting. Presidential endorsements do nothing to tip the scales of an election. No undecided voters in Pennsylvania are going to say, I'm going with newspaper A's endorsement. None. What presidential endorsements actually do is create a perception of bias, a perception of non-independence. I tend to agree with them somewhat on that claim, but I think it's like pledging a fraternity. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't in the media. And I think taking that leadership role that Barbara mentioned as the press to call out when our democracy may be going in the wrong direction, that's really an important role. It may be that more people pay attention to endorsements on a local level when you're voting in your own community. I know I pay attention to what the Times Union and other papers say. But the thing that really bothers me is what Barbara said when she quoted the On Tyranny book. And as this article points out, at the time, the company said nothing about Mr. Bezos' motivation for the decision. Some speculated without evidence that Mr. Bezos, the founder of Amazon, who had owned the paper since 2013, was trying to gain favor with a potential Trump administration. In other words, before the election happens, if he wins, what's going to happen to me? He's threatening all the media, even threatened CBS. He's going to take their license away. They can read the tea leaves. He's a billionaire. He doesn't want the forces of the Trump administration to work against him. To me, it made me think when I saw it, what does he know that we don't?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. I share some sympathy with this notion that editorial pages in general alienate readers and send them away. But on the other hand, here we are in a situation where the news columns of all of these publications are pointing out that this candidate is a grave danger. The Washington Post in particular has this terrific fact checker run by Glenn Kessler, a great journalist, that found that there were 31,000 lies uttered by Donald Trump during his administration, and that his lying quotient has actually risen during this campaign from what it was at that time. If that's what you're pointing out in the news columns, I don't think if there was an intent to soften the blow, to sort of curry favor with Donald Trump, I don't think it's going to be helped by not doing simply one editorial endorsement. Because after all, the opinion pages have been full of stuff pointing out how dangerous he is to American democracy. So if the goal was to suck up to somebody they think might become president next, I think that's a failed strategy. So the question really becomes, I think, what does this mean for the future of the legacy media, those who have historically done this? You know, it's not just that we've had newspaper endorsements. Newspapers were created, most of them, specifically to get across a point of view. Many of them had a specific political bent. I used to be the editor of a little paper in Indiana called The Republican, because that county also had The Democrat. And that's the case for many papers that were formed in the 19th century, especially. But now we have news columns that try very hard to be straightforward, to not have bias. Yet the opinion pages, as you were saying, Judy, offer you an opportunity to provide some insight, to give some judgment on some of these crucial issues that uniquely come to those of us who work in journalism. So it seems like it's a missed opportunity if we don't keep doing this.
Oh, indeed. In fact, one of the great values of an editorial department is the fact that you have people who are immersed in the news, who can look beyond the traditional news coverage or the news side news coverage and ask the really important questions and bring years often of wisdom and experience to the decisions they make. And that's how you can build trust in a community. I think Basil's letter, which he talks about the fact that the American public does not trust the media. Well, this lessened my trust in the Washington Post. It lessened my trust in the Los Angeles Times. And again, I recognize the fact if you own a newspaper, you can do whatever you want with it. But if you expect me to trust you, you have to abide by your basic mission, which is to report the news and bring an element of truth to your reporting. They offer opinions on plenty of issues. Why forego this one, such a crucial issue? And in fact, by not endorsing, they're essentially endorsing Trump, I think.
That's his point. That's actually what Donald Trump is saying. He's saying, well, they're basically saying that I'm doing a really good job. Now, it does seem to me that it's up to Jeff Bezos to say, actually, that's not what I said, but
After the non-endorsement for Trump, they had an editorial that was critical of something that is going on in the election and something that shows an example of why Trump is unfit for office. But they didn't really go far enough.
Didn't quite say that in so many words,
right.
but implied
they
it.
They sort of said it. And one of the members of the editorial board at the Washington Post who stepped down, her name is Molly Roberts, she wrote, "Donald Trump is not yet a dictator. But the quieter we are, the closer he comes, because dictators don't have to order the press to publish cooperatively. The press knows it and censors itself." This is really scaring me.
And those that, after the 2016 administration, said, well, look, he didn't become a dictator then. Well, we now have a Supreme Court that has expanded his immunity. He's getting even more bombastic in his rhetoric now, saying what he's going to do. And what's the press supposed to do? Do we take him at his word at what he says? Or are we just supposed to go, well, that's just Trump?
Yeah. You know, I'm reminded on the day before the 2016 election, the Pulitzer Prize winning editorial columnist Kathleen Parker wrote, "Be calm, everybody. Whichever candidate wins, everything will be okay." Well, she's wrong. In fact, everything was not okay because of the candidate who won. And I think that it's not inappropriate of newspapers, which have a position of influence in a community, to point that out. Even if, you know, we don't actually have an impact on changing people's votes. People used to say to me, well, you guys didn't get it right this time, did you, when we had endorsed somebody who did not win. It wasn't our goal to predict the election. It was to say who, based upon our judgment after doing all of the reporting that we've done and all the interviews by the editorial board, what we ought to do. And sometimes you know that it's going to upset things. The Times Union was the first newspaper in the country, actually, after the 2016 election, to say to the electors, you should be disloyal electors. You Trump electors, you shouldn't support him. Of course, nobody paid any attention to us, right? But it was an important thing to say, important enough that I brought in our publisher to involve himself in the conversation as well. So, and we did get cancellations, and we lost a couple of major advertisers for a little while, as a matter of fact. But sometimes you have to take a stand when something is really important.
Yeah, and all these things can coexist, right? It can be that editorials make people think you're biased, but it also should be the responsibility of the editorial board to share their opinions about serious issues affecting the community, even on the national scene. And then when you have what I've been talking about, which I think also adds into this, a sort of cumulative effect of people losing their faith in institutions like the media. So this only exacerbates the problem. And you could see them overthinking or thinking too much about this. The idea that, oh, we're going to stop this because they're going to think we're more biased. They already think you're biased. Yes. We already have a problem with people thinking that the editorial board is separate from the news columns, that the advertising department is separate from the news. news. And that's always been an issue that people have speculated is not such a hard wall. And now we've gotten even less faith in our institution now.
So are we going to get to the point where there are no opinion columns in newspapers or in whatever we call them?
Is it depends on who you agree with and whether they're allowed to write about them.
Well, if that's the case, I mean, if you're not going to do endorsements, why would you do any other sort of opinion writing? Why would you lead right up to endorsement? I don't know. It seems that if your idea is to avoid offending half of your readers, then it seems to me you're going to just run from your shadow all the time. And that sort of wishy-washiness does not recommend you as a place to trust as an information source.
Right. It's not leadership.
Yeah, just can become a cannery and not a newspaper.
You know, this is a trend that predates Trump. There's an organization of opinion writers, and it's gotten smaller and smaller over the years. And I think it's so small they don't even meet anymore.
It's been absorbed by the News Leaders Association, which was the American Society of Newspaper Editors. Yeah.
Yeah, and as newspapers cut departments, cut staff, it's one of the things that often gets cut. I mean, Barb used to write editorials, and you did that along with running the newspaper and doing many other things,
I did, yes, every day.
But at one point, did you have an opinion writer?
I was the opinion writer. I was the opinion writer, and there might have been a time where someone else, I would dub them the like a fill-in opinion writer. Everybody was so busy, it wasn't like they had time to work on those things like any of us did. But so sometimes somebody would write one occasionally, but it was,
we took it seriously.
We took it very seriously.
When I was the editor of the Record for 4 years, I wrote every editorial just because I really valued it. And
weren't you the only reporter too?
It felt that way. No, there were some great reporters there. But it does raise a question about how brave you're going to be. And I think it goes to this other issue that we really need to talk about today, and that is how to deal with the kind of language and content that we're now seeing on the campaign stump, where we see language from Donald Trump that is flatly racist, that is sexist, that is crude, that is kind of amazing. How do you deal with that when it's not the kind of language that we traditionally use in newspapers? And how do you delineate what is different about the Trump rallies from every other politician?
Right, especially when we had for years so many prohibitions, style prohibitions about using many of these words in print. We would just use stars or maybe the first letter and some stars. So we shied away from that. And if we ever happened to use one of those words, we would get a lot of blowback from readers. But that was then, this is now. I think we need to be far more comprehensive about covering these events, laying out what's happening. I mean, the last days of the campaign has been ripe with controversy because the current president of the United States misspoke, he says, and referred to Trump supporters or maybe the Trump comedian as garbage. Well, Trump has called Harris supporters vermin, all manner of racist, homophobic, sexist. The language is incredible. And the fact that he has the audacity to be offended by someone misspeaking and using the word garbage.
He was not offended at all. He was not offended. He just said, oh my God, this is fantastic. I've just got to flip this around.
I got to run a garbage truck.
I can flip. There we go. Yeah. He has flipped around what was negative publicity about Trump and his campaign. You know, he's making hay out of that while the sun shines.
It was a gap.
The Trump-centric media, Fox News, is wall-to-wall. And the front page, the wood of the New York Post, is all
about... You mean the owner Palmer?
Well, that too. It is incredible how that intentionally biased media did the last days of the campaign make that the issue.
Yeah, it's very disheartening that that has become... Look what she, by extension... thinks of you. This is what the Democrats think of you. That was, I thought, so harmful. And the mainstream media also, I think, overplayed it. But regardless of that, the not real news media that's playing that up is reaching the audience that's going out to vote for Trump.
Not to mention the enemy within comments and the idea that they were denying that that was about Democrats. That was about immigration. Meanwhile, Adam Schiff, he said all these Democrats' names, and they're still getting away with on the next interview. Oh, no, that's not what we're saying, even when held to the fire. My thing with the language that's being used, obviously, is in the context of broadcast journalism, and that's different. Mm-hmm. And the FCC says if a president of the United States in a campaign rally uses this language, that is newsworthy, and you can use that over the air without penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, your audience could complain, but if that's within a news item, that's okay. That is protected speech.
That's good to know.
And we should play it.
We absolutely should. You know, Michelle Obama has complained find that the news media exhibit a double standard in their coverage of the two presidential candidates. Mm. For example, I mean, the thing that she points out is the notion that Kamala Harris isn't providing enough policy detail. Do we really know her? Or is she too aggressive? You know, on Fox News, they keep saying that she's angry.
Another trope.
A traditional trope, especially about black women, which is outrageous, isn't it? I mean, I actually sympathize a great deal with Michelle's point. The question is, can we deal with that without seeming to ignore what ought to be the standards for a presidential candidate? That is, we ought to insist upon policy commentary from candidates. We ought to get to know them better. So how do we insist upon that without having a double standard when we know we're not getting it from Donald Trump either?
Well, I think we have to take care. We, meaning the mainstream media, needs to, I think, be more mindful about the headlines and stories that are being written and what's being focused on. I totally agree with Michelle Obama. I think it is a double standard.
It would be nice if we saw more stories that dealt with, like, this is what Harris is proposing to do about childcare. This is what Trump is proposing to do about childcare. Side by side, and talk about those issues from a real practical point of view, because oftentimes when you're talking to Trump supporters, you'll say, ah, yeah, he says these things, but then on the issues, I'm with him on wherever he is on childcare. And in fact, I don't know where he is on childcare.
Well, I don't think anybody does.
Childcare is childcare, I believe, is what he said.
I think women are supposed to do that.
Yeah. And he just came out with, what was it, the 1698 or the 1798 law that he's going to use to deport everybody?
Mm-hmm. Well, to do a thorough examination of what deporting 12 million people would do, for example, and how that would actually be accomplished, where you would put 12 million people if you're rounding them up, what would be the implications of that? That's a good story. When journalists began to question about it, J.D. Vance complained and said, you know, you're just picking on us. I'd say let's at least start with rounding up a million and see how that goes.
Which is a strategy. Attack the press and it works. They back off a little bit. They don't go as hard the next time. What about your first term, former President Trump? What happened to the wall? What happened to all that you were supposed to do the first time around?
But you do that, and of course, his supporters say we're all out to get him. The question becomes then if the broad media, which we represent, we've all worked for mass media that seeks to inform all people, if that really has a place, or are we going to see the rise of the narrowcasters, we could call them that, the podcasts that are important now that these presidential candidates are reaching out to. You know, most of us don't even know these podcasters who they're going on with.
Well, us old people. But yeah. Any young listeners are out there right now, they know them, and they probably know Joe Rogan, for one. And that's
one.
Been the latest we've been
but
hearing about.
But he's huge. But, you know, it's kind of people take clips of events, and this becomes, in effect, sort of a clipper election, where the clips become the way people get information.
It's here.
I make this point again and again, but have the candidates really sat down for a one-on-one interview with a print journalist? Harris went on 60 Minutes, but has anybody sat down with a Washington Post reporter or a New York Times reporter and really gone back and forth and had some answers to real hard-hitting questions from reporters who know the issues?
Who can take the time, you mean, who don't need to worry about the broadcast shortness?
And that hasn't happened.
And who can control the narrative that each candidate is going to try to spew out. So Harris, to her credit, is pretty adept at not answering a question that she doesn't want to answer. But Trump is the master of it, and he can filibuster as well. So even if it's for a written product, there's still a big challenge in trying to get the candidates to say something that is cogent.
You know, something that is valuable in terms of the clipping is when there are some outrageous moments that need to be spread. Like, I think about Trump's wandering comments about the electric boat motors and the sharks. Have you heard this? It was in response mm-hmm. to a question on a policy issue, and he started...
He's going with the shark, by the way.
Was that it? If you fall into the water and the engine... going to electrocute you. I think
he was going with electrocution, actually.
Oh, was it?
Jimmy Kimmel or somebody had JFK giving a speech, and they put those words into his mouth and said, when you hear a real president say that, doesn't it sound a little crazy?
It's amazing. Yeah, I think that the question was initially about offshore wind, and we end up talking about getting electrocuted by an engine or getting eaten by a shark. The value of presenting that clip is that it shows you how absolutely daffy the man is. And that is hard to get across.
So do we have any advice for the media as we head into next Tuesday?
Be brave. Be strong. Stand firm.
You're so right about it. There's something called the Newsroom Scenario Planning Guide by a journalism organization. And I don't know if this has been something before, but things that they are training journalists to do in anticipation of covering the elections includes protecting staff from harm, online harassment, dealing with physical violence, the emotional trauma and mental health involved in covering the election. These are the signs of this time that we're in.
And with that, folks, that is our last pre-election show. I'm afraid so. It's been quite a remarkable
There'll be
morning.
No media after next Tuesday, so don't worry.
Oh, dear. We'll all be here, folks, and hope we'll have a solution or some solutions coming up. I'm Rex Smith. I'm here with Barbara Lombardo and Judy Patrick and our producer, David Gassina. And we are grateful to you for joining us. We hope you'll come back again next week. We will be here with The Media Project.
To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments. She stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could...
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Fight to wage, ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.